someone, and I wish I was that person who had that time these days, but I've got to replay Symphony of the Night 3 or 4 times a year. So when am I going to fit in new games? This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. Jeff.
Anthony.
Are you a gift giver?
Not as much as I should be. I should be more gift giving. I like giving gifts. I like giving gifts to my wife and family. I should be better at giving gifts. I feel like the gift giver, when you say gift giver as a qualification, I feel like that's a step above the person who gives gifts on occasions. I feel like if you're a gift giver, if you have the gift giver moniker, mm-hmm. you kind of just do it out of the blue for no reason. And I kind of wish I was more like that.
Yeah. I guess what I'm asking is, what's your love language?
It's not material things, I'll tell you that.
I'm definitely a gift giver.
That's nice.
Yeah. What is yours though? You're not material.
Mine's
things.
Mine's more of affection. Mine's more like lovey dovey, huggy squeezy.
You're physically affectionate. I was gonna say because you don't strike me as somebody who's, which is not to say you can't give this, but you don't strike me as a words of affirmation person. I have to focus to be words of affirmation person. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I try.
You mean like to for other people or even for yourself? You don't need them for yourself?
Oh,
or you like them or?
Oh, I don't necessarily need them, but I don't give them as much as I should, right? Like, I'm not the person that's like, you know what I mean? But gift giving is definitely a thing for me. This is not about love languages. This is not an episode about love languages.
I appreciate you asking. I feel like you're just, you know, you're putting it in the bank there for future times when you want to know how to show me that you care.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Listen, as soon as we're allowed to be within proximity of another human being, I'll give you a snuggle.
Ah, that you have no idea how much that would mean to me.
Yo, at this point, a snuggle from anyone would mean everything to me.
The world.
You're lucky. You got a couple snuggle machines at home.
I do have some snuggle machines. I do. I'm very fortunate. I think my kids are either going to grow up also liking snuggles or just absolutely hating them because their dad gave them so many.
It's just too many snugs.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about, even though this is not an episode about love languages, this is an episode about gift giving because I've decided it is.
Okay.
And that's how shows work. but this is a study that came out of Ohio State. Go Buckeyes!
Yeah, baby.
This is a thing.
Nothing
now.
Anthony loves more than an Ohio State story. This is a gift for yourself, evidently.
Love to give a gift to my fellow Buckeyes. I am not a Buckeye. I did not go to Ohio State. I have cousins who did. As somebody who dropped out of multiple colleges, I just latch onto my relatives' colleges.
you're a Buckeye in your heart. You're a Buckheart.
I'm a Buckheart, is what they call me. which is a direct-to-video movie. About a man and a magical deer.
Lance Buckheart.
I zigged and you zagged. I like Lance Buckheart much better. He was given the heart of a deer in an experimental police study.
Yeah. Well, there's this killer.
And now he can sense everything.
This killer is loose in the forest. There's only one cop that can solve the case. We need Lance Buckheart.
Yeah, but I can't. Every time I try to go up to him to tell him we need him, he runs away.
you gotta approach Lance slowly, arm extended, preferably some berries in your hand.
Hand has to be palm up, not palm down when you approach Lance Buckheart.
There's that scene where he's like working in his shop, you know, and the general, the police captain, the person of authority has to come and ask Lance to come out of retirement.
All three of them. The general, the police captain, and a person of authority.
They all approach. They get to the doorway there, you know, and they see Lance in silhouette working away in his shop, you know, and they all put their hands out and slowly approach him. And he turns almost as if he can sense their presence.
You're thinking like, of an Ari Aster movie, I think. You just turned into... go Buckhearts and go Buckeyes. Buckeyes and Buckhearts can't lose. So This is a study all about gift giving, which I thought was really lovely. But yeah. Here's something interesting. We're all going through a period right now in these modern times, even before the hell year. We were going through a time of what we would call great human scarcity. Scarcity of time, scarcity of resources, right?
Yeah.
You know, the average American household right now says that they have $1,000 in their savings account, right?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. But up until then, up until the hell year. So, like, we're not saving as much money, but also we're working a lot. We also report the average consumer spending less than 45 minutes of quality time with family on a typical day.
Yeah.
Right?
Oof, that's brutal.
And
yeah.
even sheltering in place now, it's hard to find the quality time because we're all working from home, and that makes things more weird and, you know, malleable and all this stuff. These are all things we know.
Yeah.
But we do still love giving gifts. That's the thing that we love. And we are still giving gifts to each other. We are still celebrating occasions. And it might be your instinct to give people a gift that will either save them time or money, right? These are the things that we're scarce about.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
I'm going to give you a gift card to a place that you enjoy, right? That's a common one. Or maybe something like, I'm going to give you a gift card for a house cleaning service, or I'm going to give you something that takes something off your plate for the day. You know?
Yeah.
These are
yeah.
things that we appreciate, right?
For sure.
Here's what's crazy. This study is all about how we perceive gifts, the same gift, whether it is presented as I'm here to save you time or I'm here to save you money. Huh. So I can give you a $20 Starbucks gift card and I can say to you, Jeff, I know you like Starbucks and I know that like times are tough for all of us right now. And here's $20 so you can get yourself a few days worth of Starbucks, right?
Right. Saving me money. Saving me that $20 I would have spent at Starbucks.
You're going to spend it anyway. I know money's tight. Here's the thing that, you know, or right. I can say, hey, man, I know you like to order ahead. So here's a $20 gift card that you can add to your Starbucks account so you can just like walk in and get your thing.
Right. Presented in the framework of saving you time.
It's the same gift.
Right.
We hate a gift to save us money. That's what this study found. We hate it. We see it as the giver showing that they have a higher status than us.
Wow, interesting. I don't need your money.
I don't need your money,
dude. I can buy my
own
Starbucks. How dare you? How dare you insult me with your gift?
Exactly. Here's a gift. I know money's tight. Maybe as friends, we even discuss it, right? But the moment I do something that shows you, I recognize that money is tight, this is for you. Because money's tight, you resent me and think that I think I'm better than you.
Dude, that tracks. I mean, I don't think that I would put it in that term in my head of like, oh, you think you're better than me. But I do think that there is a inherent knee-jerk rejection of the cash payment.
Yeah.
You know, like the gift card as here's money. This is why I have always sort of never liked the Visa gift card that's just like blank money in a credit card ready for you to spend. Or even the Amazon gift card is lovely.
Yeah.
I've definitely got one or more Amazon gift cards in my email that have gone unredeemed just because I'm like, okay. Okay. Oh. Not because I'm like, oh, you think you're better than me, but it's just like, yeah, if I'm going to buy something on Amazon, I'll buy it on Amazon.
Yeah,
you know,
but,
I'm not.
But now you have $20 in your Amazon account, so just buy it.
Yeah, I guess.
I am the opposite way. I love a gift card.
Really?
I love it. Here's what's up, Jeff. My family is notoriously bad at giving gifts. I think this is why I love giving and receiving gifts as an adult. Literally from multiple relatives would receive the same gift multiple years in a row.
Oh,
for
really?
Multiple occasions. Yeah. Like, just my family's the kind of family where it's like, they see a deal on something and they're like, that'll make a nice gift. And they buy four of it and just give it to somebody. They're not like, and that's if they remember to give a gift.
Can I just jump in here real quick? Not to sidetrack you, but can I just tell you really quick? I may have told you this story before, actually, so stop me if I have.
Okay.
One of the most embarrassing things I've ever done in my life is my lovely, beautiful, wonderful Italian grandmother. May she rest in peace.
Give me the first name.
Mary.
Mary Cano, of course.
Yeah. Mary Bongiovanni was her maiden name. Yeah. Yes. Bongiovanni.
We love it. We love to hear it.
She, lovely woman. I gave her 1 year when I was either still in college or just out of college. I think it was just out of college. Down here in Los Angeles, you know, making my way as an actor in Los Angeles.
Sure.
I gave her for Christmas a framed copy of my headshot. Actually, maybe it was for her birthday. Whatever it was, I sent it to her.
Did you sign it for her?
No. It was just like, well, here's my headshot. Like, you know, these are professional photos of your grandson. I'm like, okay, here, wonderful. This is what I'll give you.
Did you give her the one where your arms are crossed and you're leaning kind of forward?
Oh yeah, I gave her the business. I gave her the sexy sauce. You know, I gave her the one that was the surefire hire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the one that I was given to all the casting directors, which is why, of course, I'm now a household name movie star.
You might recognize him as a dad or a cop from any number of things,
or a cop dad, and did not get the role of Lance Buckhart.
No,
but you know,
you did
not
get Lance. You did get Lance Cop Dad. By day he's a cop, and by night he's a dad during a full moon, and it makes it hard because dads are mostly needed during the day when children are awake, and cops are mostly needed at night when there's a lot of crime.
That's the central conflict of the script. That's why it's a brilliant piece of writing.
Listen, if you have a chance to watch Cop Dad, I think it's on Hulu. Definitely check out Cop Dad.
Or Cop Dad 2 Dad Cop, which is it just throws the whole thing on its head.
Yeah, because there's another guy who has, it seems, the perfect curse. And it seems like Cop Dad's kids love Dad Cop more. But in the end, they really find out that there's a place for both. I don't want to give it away. But
no spoilers.
So Mary Bongiovanni gets your serious headshot.
I give my lovely
headshot.
Grandmother this for her birthday or for Mother's. I don't know what it was. It was something. Mm-hmm. But then the next time I saw her, which was probably Christmas, visiting home, go to my grandma's house, walk into the house, and see on her table my framed headshot that I gave her just recently, next to a framed copy of the exact same headshot that I had given her the previous year. But the saint of a woman that my grandmother was, she had both of them displayed in the house. Two different frames. Same headshot.
No.
Same doofy picture of me looking at the camera trying to be all cop dad. And both of them prominently displayed right next to each other in her house.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I felt so, so dumb. I literally sent her the same picture in two different frames.
See?
Anyway.
Now, in my family, if you had done that and you saw it, you wouldn't be embarrassed. You'd just be like, oh. Well, I guess, did you need two? Because if you don't need two, I can give that to somebody else. like, Grandma, those headshots cost money. Give that back. Yeah. my family is not particularly good at giving gifts, which is why I think I grew up as somebody who appreciates a gift. But that said, I like to give a gift, but if you're going to give me a gift, I also just really love a gift card. I really love it. Just give it to me and I'll get myself whatever I want. Don't give me a bad gift. Don't give me a tchotchke that I have to find a place for. Put the money in my hand and I'll show you what I bought with it and it'll be very exciting. So I don't have that about gift cards. As a matter of fact, like my mother and my ex's mother used to give me the Visa gift cards. Because they knew that if they sent me a check, I'd just never cash it. I'd just be like, no, come on, that's stupid. So they sent me Visa gift cards because they're like, now no one has the money. What are you going to do?
Like, well, I think that's the racket of those cards, right? Is that people still don't cash them, and Visa's just like, thanks for your money. You'll never have to spend.
Yeah, after 18 months, we start stealing at $5 a week.
Yeah.
But anyway, but those gifts that are presented as like, I'm just trying to save you a little money, make you think less. And they ask people, I know you said, I don't think like, fuck you. You think you're better than me. I don't think any of us think that consciously, but we do feel like you're saying, we feel a little something. There's an interesting thing about this study is I found out this term, there's something called the MacArthur scale of subjective status, which is really interesting. The MacArthur scale of subjective status basically takes a drawing of a ladder with 10 rungs. The number one is the lowest rung. Number 10 is the highest rung. And what you do is they'll ask people in certain behavioral studies, put yourself on the rung of the ladder you think you are in society.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And in this one, and they asked it in a very interesting way. They were like, instead of what rung do you think you're on? They instead asked, put yourself on the rung of the ladder you think the person who gave you the gift would put you on, and put them on the rung of the ladder you think they would put themselves on. And even though people weren't like, fuck you think you're better than me, they were a little wounded, and they saw it as the gift giver. They always put the gift giver on a higher rung, because they were always like, this person is, oh, they're deigning to help their friend who needs help. Oh, thank you, my lord. You know?
Right.
Now, opposite here, a gift that's given. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, this to me mirrors that thing that we've all experienced when we reach a certain age. You know, there's that time in your life when someone's like, I'll get the check. And you go, oh, dude, awesome.
Thank you.
And then, yes, that's amazing. I didn't want to get the check. And then there's this point at which you mature to this place of, I'll get the check. No, I got the check. No, I got the check. No. And then you fight over who's paying.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the same thing as like, I don't need you to get the check. I'm perfectly capable of getting the check.
I don't need to be indebted to you for these fucking breadsticks, Charles.
Yes.
I didn't even eat that many breadsticks, Charles.
Let's just say someday at some point, I will ask you for a favor.
No, you won't.
And we will both think back to these breadsticks.
No, we will not, because my card is in there, Charles.
Nah, I'm just saying, I already talked to the waitress.
Oh, she that's said it was the fine. Fucking move. That's the fucking move. And this is a study that leads to a million digressions, but that's a fucking move that I don't enjoy.
The really? Dude, that's the one. I feel like that's the one that ingratiated me to my future in-laws.
The magnanimous lord who goes off. The magnanimous lord who Robin Hoods. He puts on a mask, and no one knows who he is. Who knows who the Scarlet Pimpernel truly is? No one knows who Zorro is. This man of the people. He goes like, you go off to the bathroom. Oh, I'm good. Yeah. I'm just gonna run to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And you hand the fucking server your card. And then,
I did that to my in-laws like the first two times I met them.
The server comes up and is just like, oh, no, they took care of it already. And that person just leans back like, check and mate. I've never watched Leverage, but I assume this is a move that somebody would pull on the television series Leverage.
I don't know what it's about, but...
Do I have leverage now? Is this the leverage?
I did that. I did that to my in-laws, man. I feel like that was a winning move for the in-laws.
Now, doing it to your in-laws is different, because that is the, I am a good partner. I am a partner that can provide. And also, not only am I a partner, I want you to know that I didn't assume that you were going to take care of this.
Right.
I wanted to do something nice for you, because clearly you've done so many nice things to raise this perfect person that I love. Right. You know what I mean? That situation, it can be a different thing. But like in a situation where it's a bunch of friends hanging out, and like the one bro is just like, I walked off to talk to the server, and now I'm the guy who paid, and now you're all put in a position of, look at me, and I didn't, you know, hey, I'm not... I didn't choose to sit at the head of the table. It was just the chair that was open. That's that guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I mean?
I guess I'll sit here, everybody.
Does everybody feel weird about sitting at the head of the table? That's fine. I'll sit at the head of the table. It's fine. No, I know I brought a date with me and I could sit next to her. Yeah. No, I know that you're single and you could sit in this. Yeah, no, it's fine.
Yeah, no, but I also brought this ladder. And I'm just going to put your name tag on one of the rungs, if that's cool with you.
I made everybody name tags. You can grab them off of this ladder. And don't worry, they're not in alphabetical order or anything. You just, wherever you see your name, just grab it.
Don't worry about mine. Mine's the hardest one to get to. It's way up there. Yeah, don't worry about my name tag.
I didn't want you all to have to climb this ladder. It's just a drawing of a ladder, but I didn't want you to have to metaphorically climb this drawing of a ladder. I'll do all the metaphorical work. But on the flip side, a gift that is presented as saving time... Because there have been a number of studies recently that say we are now not as much into material things as an American culture. We are now into the hustle culture. I'm so busy. I've just got so much going on. It doesn't matter what I'm wearing.
Time is the only currency now, Anthony.
Time is the only currency. It doesn't matter what I'm wearing or what accessories I have. What matters is how many meetings I've taken today, how many things I have to run around. So giving somebody a gift that says, I just wanted to save you a little time, makes that person actually feel better about themselves, because then it's like, this person sees my work. They see how busy I am.
They recognize that I am a busy person, and that inflates my status. That makes it, they're not condescending to me. They're actually recognizing the toil and trouble that I put in just getting through this workaday life.
Those people would either put them and the gift giver on the same rung or would put themselves higher.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. And it all seems to track. Like, just anecdotally in my head, I feel that. That makes sense. And now I'm struggling to think of ways that I can buy gifts that are time savers, or is what they're saying is what's important is how you frame the gift.
The framing is pretty important. I think that's what they're getting at, is they're like, you know, a gift is already an act of kindness. You want to make sure it doesn't look like an act of charity.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
There are some situations where we want acts of charity, right? There are some situations where it's like, you know, particularly the first thing that comes into my mind is like, you know, a family illness or the loss of somebody in a family, then charity is.
But you know what? Actually, I think it's still relevant there, because it tends to be the case I've found that people much prefer like, hey, I made you a meal.
We made you a meal.
You know, there's a horrible thing that happened, or someone, there's a family illness, whatever. I made you a meal. And that truly is, I understand you don't have the time to make food for yourselves. You know, I think that's still consistent.
You're right. That is consistent. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was
saying,
I think
somebody would be like, oh, you know, we had this horrible thing happen or whatever. I mean, even I was thinking back last year when my eye, you know, situation happened, people, especially... listeners to We Have Concerns were incredibly generous, but I always felt a little guilty, not because I felt like anybody was condescending, but it just felt, I felt guilty accepting money. But the people who were like, hey, you know, I'll send some food to your house. I'd always felt like a different kind of thing, because it was like, oh, it's taking work out of my wife's hands. It's contributing to our being able to get through this, where money actually does contribute to us getting through it also, but it felt differently.
Did you get the singing telegram I sent? I know you weren't allowed to listen to it or see it, but...
That was the opposite of giving me time. That felt like you were taking time from me.
I know you were strapped down to a chair and you couldn't see, and loud noises really hurt, but...
Yes, it was... I mean, I think the thought counts, I think, in the sense that you
honestly
put some thought into it.
Honestly, if I can be real, I thought you were somebody else. I had two friends that were going through a thing.
That does make sense now that I think back to the song, which specifically had more to do with a birthday than anything else.
Yeah, it's your special day, buddy. Hope you enjoy your special day.
I mean, it didn't quite make any sense.
It was special. Special does not, special doesn't necessarily mean positive.
Well, in that case, it certainly didn't. It, no.
Special just means out of the ordinary. You know, it's not the ordinary.
Nothing, nothing positive about any of that, really.
I want to real quick, I want to just talk about a couple other points of this that I thought were very interesting. First of all, people who were told that the gift was to save them money tended to spend it on more useless and extravagant things to prove that they didn't need the money.
Wow.
Whereas people who were told this gift card will save you time tended to spend it on other practical things that would save them time. It was, people are just like, well, I'll show you. I don't need your money. Yeah. I'm going to spend it on frivolous bullshit.
I'm going to buy a muffin at Starbucks. How do you like that?
Those muffins are trash, and we all know it. They're dry and they're weird, and they offer to heat them up, which I think is strange. And it doesn't mask the fact that it's stale. Okay?
I did not buy my Frappuccino with your gift card. You happy now? I bought a fucking muffin. It was garbage.
I bought a spring edition New York Starbucks tumbler. I don't live in New York. I don't use a Tumblr.
Apple CD.
Fiona Apple. They still have them.
I don't even have a CD player anymore. But that's what I used your gift card on, a Fiona Apple CD.
They still have a Fiona Apple and a Paul McCartney CD in stock at Starbucks, and I bought them both. Fuck you, I don't need your money.
That's such a good transition to us asking for their money.
Yeah, so give us your money. Give it to us. Just go to, listen, before I even, just shut up. Just go to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Put it into your device right now. Shut up. Just do it.
Yeah, yeah. Do it.
Do it.
Now we're going to tell you
what it's all about. While you're there.
What are you looking at right now? What are you looking at?
What you're looking at is a gift that's going to save you time. How? I don't know. Jeff?
That's the surprise. Put in a dollar amount. And if it doesn't save you time, just wait longer.
And put in more dollars. This is what they, what is this called? What do the evangelicals call this? but there's something ministry, like generosity ministry or something like that. I forget what it's called. Yeah. This is not that. Let me take that back before, and just in case there are any legal or financial institutions listening.
Although we should really look into that, because I think you also don't have to pay taxes.
Start a church. What this basically is a bunch of cool extra things that you get in exchange for helping us continue to make the show. It can be things like bonus content, early episodes, access to a Discord to hang out and speak with other concerned citizens. Sometimes we watch bad movies and it goes fine. We watch Cannonball.
It goes so fine. It was so fine. Last night we just had a hangout with folks, and it was delightful as always. We're figuring out the technical stuff. We're talking to people. It's great. We have had multiple year relationships with folks now through these hangouts. It's great to see how people's lives are going and catch up. Be one of those people. Join our little community of folks. We would love to see that. You can hang out in the Discord and talk via text. You can talk to us on hangouts. All of these extra ways to spend your time by giving us gifts.
Yeah. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that what it's all about, according to this study by Ohio State University? Go Buckeyes.
Oh, Buckeyes. Hey, Anthony, speaking of giving yourself something, I want to talk.
Is this about a sexually transmitted infection? Because that's gone.
No.
That's gone.
No, no,
and that's
no.
gone a little bit because of my own personal responsibility, but mostly because of quarantine.
Thanks, quarantine,
for finally getting rid of that burning sensation. Go on.
No, this is about your other love, or at least my other love, and that is eating. Eating.
It's
the thing that has stayed with us through quarantine, eating.
That's true. We all still eat, and that's the one. I guess you're putting it as you're framing it as a hobby, and I think that's interesting.
Well, in this case, it is a hobby. I want to talk to you about competitive eating.
Oh, shit. Kobayashi.
Yeah, bro, you know what I'm talking about. This is a story sent to us by the Badger himself, ooh, Steve Badgery.
The Badger returns. Badger's back.
Ow, ow. That's the sound a Badger makes, right? I don't know what the sounds a Badger
makes.
Hey,
if you send in enough stories, by the way, and we feel up to it, we'll give you a nickname, and it'll be fine. It'll be a fair to middling to bad nickname.
So creative, like us just leaving one letter off your name.
Yeah, we'll give you a nickname. All you got to do is send a story to wehaveconcernsshow@gmail.com. Put it on the Discord in the Science News channel. Put it on the subreddit, which is wehaveconcerns.reddit.com. Man, they're just, listen, I said it last week. Get off the Facebook group. But you could leave it there, I guess.
Yeah, there's a Facebook group as well. This is a story from The Guardian about competitive eating, specifically about a new study, a new scientific study that was just published in a journal about the upper limits of human performance in competitive eating. So, you know about the famous 4-minute mile. Roger Bannister busts open. Everyone thinks 4-minute mile is impossible. They think human beings cannot do a 4-minute mile, cannot get below 4 minutes in the running of the mile.
Is the fact that I can run a 4-minute mile a big deal?
You can't run a 4-minute mile.
That's like a big deal?
Yes. Yes. It's for the longest time, they didn't think human beings could do it until Roger Bannister broke that record. You know that.
Four minutes. I've been running an incredibly fast world record mile my whole life, and I didn't know.
You don't run a 4-minute mile. How dare you?
Dude, I did a 4-minute mile before we started recording today. I do a 4-minute mile.
It's like your warm-up.
I do a 4-minute mile every morning.
Maybe we have a different definition of what mile is.
I mean, I don't think so. It's a mile, right? Holy
shit. Are you
being
serious?
Am I like a really fast runner?
You don't run a 4-minute mile.
Holy shit. For real? 4 minute. Hold
the
on.
4-minute mile
hold
in 1954.
I'm Googling this.
Before 1954.
There's
you know
a
this?
Movie Runners about back? The 4-minute mile?
Anthony, stop it. Stop it. The point is now people basically average about 4-minute miles in running a marathon.
That's what I'm
people
saying.
Run, yeah.
I
well,
do
that's
it all
what
the time.
Happens. You do not. You, I guarantee you don't even run a 7-minute mile.
You're so mad. And I know you're so mad because you actually have trained in running, and that's why I did
yes,
this.
Yes, I know what I'm talking about.
I know that you're actually like, take it seriously and you've run a marathon before, and I could just see you getting so
seven times I ran a marathon.
I could see you getting so mad by either the fact that I could run really fast or that I was just being so condescending to what you love, and you were like, you couldn't figure out which one it was, but you were mad.
That's true. All of that is accurate. Here's the thing, Anthony. This science paper,
we call it a science study, paper.
A science paper. This study claims to have found the equivalent of what we thought was the 4-minute mile. The 4-minute mile, of course, this barrier that has been broken and now is routinely broken. Anybody in the Olympics now is well below 4 minutes in a mile. And like I said, basically the world record for the marathon is right around 4-minute miles, 26 times in a row. So, you know, human beings have transcended what they perceive to be barriers. But this paper claims to have found the upper limits of human performance in the hot dog eating contest. It claims to have calculated the unbeatable, unbreakable. Are we okay?
Yeah, we're good. Hold on.
I just heard Craig.
Yeah, Craig.
I heard Craig.
Don't you worry about Craig. Craig's an asshole. That's why we're recording locally, because Craig's a son of a bitch.
All right, I'm going to keep going.
You keep
Mark
going.
This time.
Hold on one second. Let me just, you know what? Yeah. Let me just make sure. Yep. I'm just going to do this. Is your OnWeCaster monitor still going?
No. The window's open, but it doesn't seem to be moving.
Okay. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you this cool new link.
All right. So close that window?
Yeah, you can close that window. I'm going to send you this cool new link, and you just join that. And once you do, we should be okay.
Well, I'm still recording locally, so.
Yeah, me too, and that's what's really important. Copy link. Where is my I am with you? Craig, you son of a bitch bastard.
Classic Craig.
This is classic Craig. Classic Craig.
All right, we're moving again.
Moving again.
Moving right along.
Okay. Right so along. Go back. This right. this is a claims this to, is a science
claims
paper.
To,
go back to that.
Yeah. Claims this study claims to have found the upper limits of hot dog consumption by a human being in 10 minutes. This is based on 39 years of historical data from Nathan's famous hot dog eating contest on Coney Island,
New
York.
I've been there. I went to it.
Have you seen it in person?
I saw Kobayashi.
You did?
Yeah.
Was it like seeing Elvis in his prime?
I was way, way, way back because, like, man, that thing was crowded. But, like, yeah, it was pretty special to be there.
So you know about this. So if I were to ask you what the current record for the number of hot dogs consumed by a human being in 10 minutes is, would you be able to tell me?
123.
That's too high.
247.
75. Joey Jaws Chestnut.
Joey Chestnut.
He's the current world record holder at 75 hot dogs in 10 minutes.
But that was years ago. So that means nobody's beaten the chestnut.
Yeah. I mean, this is July 14th, 2020 is the date of this article. And it said last month he set the record.
Okay.
So 75 last month. And the story of how this long history of this hot dog eating contest came into being is pretty wild, because there were years and years and years where the hot dog eating contest was this friendly competition, mm-hmm. and it was mostly real big dudes that were, you know, like, you know, Phil from down the block,
yeah.
who is notoriously eating lots of food. He's going to go and hang out at Coney Island this weekend and see how many hot dogs he can eat. And they would eat, you know, five.
Kobe, you know,
whatever,
dude.
And everybody would be.
And Kobayashi's a stick. He's a thin dude.
Well, that's what I'm getting to, right? Because then one day in 1984, this person, I don't even know if it's a male or female, but this person by the name of Birgit Felden, I think it's a male, Birgit Felden, 17-year-old, 130-pound West German judo team member.
Wow.
Walks into Coney Island and wins the contest by eating 9.5 hot dogs, despite the fact that Birgit had never eaten a single hot dog before that day.
I feel like I could eat 9.5 hot dogs.
I feel like I could eat 9.5 hot dogs too, but it was a different era. It was 1984.
Time. People, the average person was only 4'7" then.
Yeah. Yeah. No one remembers 1984.
No one can remember it.
Marty McFly was going back in time.
That wasn't even that. It was a year later. We 1984. Yeah. All we have that survived about 1984 is a movie about some Olympic hockey team. That's all we have. We don't know what happened. Was that 1980 or 1984? Nobody knows.
I don't know.
Everybody was 4'7". Hot dogs were like half the size then, and they were only eating.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this study is that for the purposes of this contest, this Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest, which is the premier food competition, the premier competitive hot dog competition in the world. That's really what put competitive eating on the map, is the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest.
Coney Island fills up, man. You would think it was like a music festival or something. When they do the day they do the Nathan's,
people want to see it, huh?
People come from all over to see it, dude.
All right.
And that was 10 years ago. It's probably even bigger now.
The thing about this is that they have maintained the same size and shape of the hot dogs for like 80 years of this hot dog eating contest. It's been like consistent. So it's good data, right? And they're analyzing 39 years of historical data from the contest. So it's a consistent size. So 1984, Birgit shatters everyone's conceptions of who can even eat hot dogs fast by coming in being this tiny, thin, real thin competitor.
Love it.
And beating everybody.
Love it.
And then, yeah, and then in the 90s, you're right, Kobayashi is eating like 50. In 2001, Takeru Kobayashi takes down 50 hot dogs at the contest, setting the new world record. And before that day, in 2001, before that day, the record was 25.
What caused the jump? What caused this giant jump?
Training. They started taking it seriously like an actual competition, like an actual athletic event.
So if I took my jogging seriously, I could probably get down to like a 3-minute mile.
How dare you? How dare you?
You're saying I just have to work at it.
What they do now is they'll drink huge volumes of liquid or gels to expand their stomach. And because it's liquid or gel, they're not actually taking in any calories, so that it gets expunged from their bodies. But their stomach remains expanded before the competition. And this dude Chestnut, who won this year with 75 hot dogs, he says he trains for 3 months leading up to the competition in Coney Island, including weekly practice runs, a carefully controlled diet, and yoga and breathing exercises to help with mental focus.
Wow.
These folks are taking this seriously. They're training their bodies like Olympic athletes, and they're taking down, this dude took down 75 hot diggity dogs.
That's amazing. So it's not, is it not dangerous?
Oh, I'm certain it's dangerous. I'm certain it's awful for your body. And
like, I think about that every time I see it, I'm just like, that can't be okay. Like, it can't be okay.
It's repugnant on a number of levels from my perspective. I mean, it's kind of obscene that there are human beings starving in the world, nay, in our country, and yet people are shoving as many hot dogs down their gullet as humanly possible. So on that level, I have to voice my sort of concern about it just on that level. But yeah, and then also, like, who knows? But, you know, I watch football, and that's just like a concussion machine. So
oh, yeah.
I'm a hypocrite. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't judge, I guess.
For sure. I think that's so fast. So it goes from 10 to 25 just by people being like, well, I just have to beat this record. And then it goes from 25 to 50 through the use of, like, hey, we're going to train it this like it's an actual sport.
And they realize that it isn't just big dudes, you know, the whole concept of, well, he's a big eater, he's a big dude. It turns out that actually being in prime physical condition,
you want that,
means that there's less constriction on your stomach. Yeah. So
plus you want that hummingbird metabolism too. That little guys have, you know what I mean?
It's actually more about elasticity of the stomach, so that if there's not a lot of stuff weighing it down or constricting it, it can expand and contract at big rates. Because what's happening with these top level competitors is that they are literally expanding their stomachs for short periods of time to just insane levels to get more shit in there.
Dude, I feel like,
and by shit I mean actual shit, because they're hot dogs.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, you think about blowing up a balloon and then deflating it over and over again, and I'm just like, hey, you know what? These guys are going to get older, and their stomach's going to be it's going to be a mess. It's got to be a mess somehow.
You would think there's going to be some great documentary in 20 years about, like, former competitive eaters.
You ever, you know? Oh God, I want to make that documentary so bad. Siri, remind me in 20 years to make a documentary about old competitive eaters. Have you ever gone down the rabbit hole of competitive eating YouTube?
No, I have no desire.
There is a channel I found that.
Of course, there
it
is.
It was served up to me one day, and I was like, "Here we go, rock and roll." It's a gentleman named Matt Stoney.
What are you going to do? You can't fight the algorithm. What are you supposed to do? It was right there. All I had to do was click on it. What am I supposed to do?
But here's the thing. It's not about fighting the algorithm, Jeff, because the algorithm wasn't wrong. The algorithm in this instance was like, my dude, do you want to see how competitive eaters train? And I was like, yes. I didn't know, but a yes. So, like, this dude, Matt Stoney, he hasn't posted anything. Oh, he did post something a couple weeks ago. 1.2 gallons of fruit cocktail eaten in under 5 minutes. 13,500 calories worth of extra crispy fried chicken wings challenge. Like
foul.
Oh, dude, it's wild. Five whole pizzas and a Q&A at the same time.
And a Q&A. Well, now I'm interested, right? Because I have Qs that need
A. I got Qs that need A. And if you're going to do it while you're eating an entire five pizzas, like, hell yes. 10,000 calories worth of Super Bowl nachos. That's the one that I saw the first time. It's 13 million views. And he just,
you know what?
He
if I'm going to watch someone eat nachos, they better damn well be Super Bowl nachos. You know what I'm saying?
Hell yeah.
If they're just like playoff nachos or regular season nachos or even like off-season nachos, there's no way.
Nachos. That's all I want.
Big game nachos.
Big game nachos. Yeah, 100 Eggo waffles destroyed. This is crazy. And it's like this little guy.
100 Eggo waffles.
Destroyed. 350 packs of Pop Rocks. He just eats them with a giant man. I am telling you.
No, I've heard you'll explode if you do that.
You will. And
that's what I've heard.
He nearly did. He nearly did.
I hope he didn't have any Coke afterwards.
It ended with, what kind? I think he had a lot of Coke beforehand.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just so fascinating watching this. And like, I don't know why competitive eating is so fascinating to me.
I don't either. I find it very hard to watch. I find it disgusting, personally.
It's gross, but I'm transfixed by it. And I would love to know why. You know?
I would love to know why, too, but that's more a you question. Here's the question that this study aims to answer, which is where we started. The upper limit, the 4-minute mile, well, I mean, 4-minute mile is actually a pretty bad analogy because 4-minute mile was busted, but if there actually is a real limit to what human beings, how many hot dogs human beings can get into themselves in 10 minutes, this study claims to have mathematical proof of that. Now we are at 75 as the world record currently, thanks to Mr. Joey Jaws Chestnut. What do you think, according to this study, is the upper limit of human capability for hot dogs in 10 minutes?
127.
It's only 84.
Nah.
We're only 9 away from the human ability to consume hot dogs.
Science doesn't know. Science, here's the thing. They're not taking into account, Jeff, the human heart, the human spirit. Okay? They don't know. They said 72 was impossible, Jeff. They said that I don't run a 4-minute mile.
Yeah. Yeah. Anthony Carboni, notorious science doubter, is has more ideas. No, what is actually fascinating to me is that according to this study, according to the math and analysis of human anatomy, that the upper bound for this process, 10 minutes of eating hot dogs and buns, isn't the stomach.
It's the heart.
It is.
It's the human.
It's the wanna. It's the wanna.
It's the human heart.
How much wanna have you? Yeah. No, it's actually your mouth. It's your ability to chew. We literally cannot masticate fast enough to get more than 84 hot dogs in 10 minutes into
masticate
ourselves.
Masticate fast enough sounds like a Lin-Manuel Miranda freestyle.
Thank you. That was me. That was not the article. We can't chew enough hot dog in 10 minutes to get more than 84 hot dog in us.
Nah, I don't buy it.
That's the science, man.
How'd they find that out?
Well, they took into account gastric capacity and they took into account time per chew and how the matter has to be the mass of the hot dog, which has remained constant over the 39 years of this study, mm-hmm. and how the smallest amount of it, or the biggest amount of it that it needs to be to get down your throat, so how much it has to be chewed, and they realized that you literally can't chew enough in 10 minutes to eat more than a certain number of grams, which equate to 84 hot dogs.
Wow. Wow.
I think the actual upper bound, let me see if I can find it here. The actual upper bound is 832 grams.
Hmm. What kind of machine do they use to test that?
It said the upper limit of fresh matter ACR in humans. I don't know what ACR stands for.
Fresh matter is a good name for like a street brand, like a streetwear brand.
Yeah, 832 grams per minute minus one. I don't know what minus one's there for. The math. This is the actual study I'm looking at. Should trained competitive eaters regularly reach ACRs greater than 400 grams per minute, with the current record at 734 grams per minute? A minute minus one. I think that's per minute. I may be saying this all wrong. I'm getting into the
Don't get into the weeds.
But the point is, that equates to 84 hot dogs, and supposedly that might be the end for competitive eating. Once we get to 84 hot dogs, what then?
How do they test that? How do they test? What do they use to test it? They have a chew machine? What do they do?
machine. I think this is all theoretical.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
This is all theoretical.
That's what I'm saying. Your theory means nothing to me. I believe we're going to reach 127.
Well, you've always been an idealist when it comes to putting food into your
I am an idealist, you know, when it comes to human excess. I'm not an idealist when it comes to a lot of things, but I will tell you this. Humans will find a way to reach even higher levels of excess and grossness. And that's what competitive eating is. And that's why I believe we're going to hit 127.
Well, this,
I will see it in our lifetime. Your children might see 200 in their lifetime.
According to this study, the only way that we could actually break 84 hot dogs is if there is a, quote, new kind of competitor. Someone with gigantism or a metabolic condition that has placed them well outside the normal parameters of human biology.
But metabolic condition has nothing to do with chewing. That's stupid. They just undid all of their own research.
That's what they say. It's the limiting factor is chewing and swallowing. So maybe that's what they mean by, maybe the swallowing has something to do with it too. But check this out. Listen to this data
I used
point.
To know a frat this dude who could keep the back of his throat open and like just pour a beer down it. Could that guy just shove a hot dog down his throat?
Maybe. I'm sure that guy has shoved the hot dog down the throat, if you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying? He's in a frat.
They eat a lot of hot dogs, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Check out this data point, Anthony. You ready to get your mind blown? Competitive eaters, human beings.
Regular folk like you and I.
No, they have achieved eating speeds that have transcended any other animals in other speeds. Bears, coyotes, they eat with incredible speed. But if you go on a pound for pound, gram for gram basis,
ain't nobody beat human beings.
Ain't nobody beat elite human
eaters.
Ain't
nobody beat the elite human eating. The elite eat agents.
The elite eat agents.
That's amazing.
That's what they're called. So we can eat faster, you know, pound for pound, than a bear, a coyote, a wolf, anything you want to go up against.
I won't rest until we can eat more than a whale. You know how a giant, like a blue whale, just like swims and it's got the baleen and it just takes in living things as it swims?
Yeah.
I won't rest until we can eat more than a whale, dude. I'm going to put all my money into this. This is where all my money goes from now on.
I'm just saying that we are on top of the food chain.
We can do better.
In a way that I don't think you think about when you think food chain. You know what I'm saying?
Better, Jeff. It's not that I'm not impressed by the achievements of human beings. It's that once we get used to those achievements, we become complacent and too self-congratulatory, and that is when human growth stops, and that is why I am putting all of my efforts and resources into hitting 127.
I mean, I respect that. I respect that. You're going to stop your jogging regimen?
I mean, what do I jog? I jog 8 minutes a day. I do a mile out from my apartment. I do a mile home. It's 8 minutes. I don't need to stop jogging.
By the way, I found out what ACR means in this paper. ACR is active consumption rate.
Hell yeah. I used to own some Nike ACR shoes. Really fancy ones for competitive eating.
Nike's all about the consumption rate, that's for sure.
Does this make you
nauseated? Yes.
But are you proud?
No. I mean, I guess it shows that we are a uniquely elastic species, right? Anything we decide to try to get real good at, we can. That is remarkable to me that you go, the human body, if you decide, hey, I want to get real good at this thing, you can get real good at that thing. That's pretty impressive.
Love it. Love it. I love everything. I love everything about it. I don't know why I'm fascinated by it. Maybe it's because, like you said, Jeff, we are now better than all of the animals. And I love that. Maybe I knew it on an instinctive level that now we are better than all animals.
I think we must be, right? Now, finally, we finally have the one thing that we thought they were better at us at.
Skateboards, and we can eat hot dogs faster than any of them. So we win.
Take that, all other
what
animals.
What would it take to get you? Do you ever do a competitive eating thing? You ever try to do like a contest at a wing place where you get the free t-shirt or anything like that?
I did the, you ever been to Buellton?
No.
You ever go to Buellton? Buellton is famous. If anybody has driven the Highway 5 in California, which basically goes all the way up the length of California, Buellton is famous for having this place called Pea Soup Anderson's.
I love Pea Soup Anderson's.
Pea Soup Anderson's is notorious because they have billboards that are ridiculously far from Pea Soup Anderson's, advertising that it's just a few exits away. It's like just 148 miles to Pea Soup Anderson's. Take the 48th turn or whatever. It's like it's funny. And then there's lots of those billboards. You know, just only 112 miles to Pea Soup Anderson. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all the way up the 5, right? So we used to stop at Pea Soup Anderson's in Buellton, and they had a challenge at the Pea Soup Anderson's because they have a never ending pea soup bowl. And I guess if you could eat 20 bowls of the pea soup, everybody in your party eats free. And I thought in my college days, when I was making that drive with my college friends, I could be the hero because I was Italian kid, you know, grew up eating pasta, loved eating. I'm a big fan of eating, could eat a lot. I thought, I'm going to get a free meal from my friends. I can eat 20 bowls of pea soup Anderson's, no problem.
How far did you get?
Boy, was I wrong. I think I got to eight. Maybe it was like 10 or 11. It was not even close to 20. And I was like, but I started stupid because they give you like bacon and chives and sour cream to put in it, which I started in the first. I didn't focus. I didn't take it seriously. I just thought, how hard could it possibly be to eat 20 bowls of soup?
Your hubris was your downfall, Jeff.
As it always is, Anthony. As it always is.
I have never done anything competitively, but when I was a young lad, my sister and I used to pride ourselves on going to all you could eat like $5 Chinese buffets and just wrecking shop. We would love to just wreck shop on a Chinese buffet to the point where like the people who were with us would be like, you're disgusting. You're disgusting. And like, I remember there was one where like, if you paid a couple dollars extra, you also got crab legs if you went one day a week. And so it was like unlimited crab legs and Chinese buffet for $7.99. And we were eating crab legs at such a speed that like, crab leg husks wound up in like our soda cups and stuff. Like we were really like my sister and I were going for it. But I've never done anything competitively.
Yeah, me neither. Not actual competitive. But I want to leave you with this quote just to put in perspective the achievement of competitive eaters. This is the quote from the actual study. It says the feats of elite competitive eaters are quite biologically impressive, even when placed in the context of other sport competitions. Winning ACR has increased approximately 700% in less than 40 years, whereas world record performances in various mainstream sports have only progressed a medium of approximately 40% since the inception of world record recognition. Truly.
This is the sport of the future.
Many of today's elite competitors achieve an ACR fivefold above the average untrained individual. Brilliant. This starkly contrasts marathon competitions where the world record holder only maintains approximately double the speed of average
marathoners.
But
can I tell you what, though? Can I tell you what I think that the trick of that is? Oh, no, you're right. It's that you said since the inception. Since the inception of world records. Wow.
Yeah.
So it's not that this is a new sport. It's not that this is a new thing. It's that this is the sport we were built for.
We finally found human beings' true calling, and that is to be obscenely consumptive.
This is the ultimate sport. This is, we're talking about how we're going to maybe one day biologically change humans to play other sports, right? Like maybe they get bionic implants, maybe they, you know, who knows, maybe organs, maybe some. Dude, there's a sport that we're built for right now, and it is the future of esports. It's the future of human growth. It's the sport, it's the future of our society.
Esports. Electronic hot dog eating
contest.
This is
it, baby. Put it on Twitch. If I want any channel that shows League of Legends should also show an equal number of competitive eating events, because this is where the real, these are the two growth markets in sports. This is the future of athleticism in human beings, video games and eating too much. We've known it from the beginning and we've denied it. And it's time to stop denying that we were built to play video games and eat too much.
I mean, at least I was.
It's time, Jeff. It's time for us to reclaim our true spot at the top of the food chain. It's time for you and I to become competitive eaters.
I'm ready. I was born ready. But let me ask you this question. Do you think that the equivalent of performance-enhancing drugs in this sport is just weed?
Yeah, probably like just probably like high. Weed and also it's probably like weed and like caffeine pills.
Yeah. Just keep going, get you high, and then just want to put stuff in your mouth. Keep going and eating and eating.
Yeah, man.
Eating. Keep that
hunger. This is a loop. This is a training loop that I am already participating in.
That's right.
I don't know why I'm not just, I don't know why I haven't gone pro, in all honesty.
I gotta go pro.
Do you know what I think it is? I think it's the filling my belly with gel to make it expand. That's the one thing about this I don't like.
That's your deal breaker?
That's the deal breaker, man. The rest of it sounds very pleasant to me.
Well, what does the gel taste like? Answer me that question.
I don't think I'd like the way it felt in my belly. I don't think distending my stomach sounds fun.
No, none of this sounds fun.
The rest
to me.
Of it sounds
there
fun.
There are pictures in this article. There's a picture in this article of Joey Chestnut, Joey Jaws Chestnut, and he does not look like a triumphant winner. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. That's, you and I have a different like idea of what a champion looks like, I guess. Sorry, that's what peak male performance looks like, Jeff.
Okay.
Sorry about it.
I guess you're right. I mean, I guess the end of a marathon, they don't look that good either. You know, end of a boxing match, it's not like you're like, wow, look at that person. You know, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. It can be deceiving,
man. What about Butterbean? Remember Butterbean? May he rest in peace. That man was a fighter.
How many Butterbeans can you eat in 10 minutes? You know what I'm saying?
Nobody can eat a Butterbean. He died a champion.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about it. I get butter beans and butter balls and I don't know.
How dare you? He was a man, Jeff. He was a fighting man. Yeah, I think I'm going to train in this. If I can get past this stomach distending thing, I think this might be my calling. We'll think about it. I don't know. How do you concerned citizens feel about it? Let's chat about it on Discord together.
Yeah, I want to know if people buy into the upper limit idea. Like, is there an upper limit?
I think human beings will.
Anthony scoffs.
I think human beings will always surprise you, my friend. Always surprise you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Remember to check out patreon.com/wehaveconcerns if you have not, to get some extras and also to help us continue making the show. And we will see you next week.
Thanks for watching.
I'm going to go have 7 to 80 hot dogs.